Welcome to CFO.University's audio version of T.J. Romano's CFO Ed Talk, Finding and Maximizing the True Value of Intellectual Property. Learn from T.J. and his banana bike model how you can find and maximize the value of the intellectual property hidden at your company. Enjoy, learn, engage.
Intellectual property, is it important? Does it have value? Well, today we're going to address those issues. Today's talk is about finding and maximizing the true value of intellectual property and how you as financial professionals fit into that universe. So just to begin, is intellectual property important? Well, let's start with a history lesson. The U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8, grants Congress the power to promote the arts and useful science by granting to inventors and artists a right to the exclusive use of their inventions and creations. So the founding fathers of the United States found intellectual property to be an important way to promote progress. So how does that translate to today? Well, if we look at the value of S&P 500 companies, starting in 1975, the value then was about 20% of the value was intangible assets. And today, it's now up to 80% of the value of S&P 500 companies are intangible assets. One of those is intellectual property. So here in the real world, not just in the constitutional universe, intellectual property has a high value. So today, I'd like to talk first to give some education, a quick primer on what are the different areas of intellectual property. And sometimes I'll just refer to intellectual property as IP. And then secondly, we'll talk about some ways to create IP value, ways that you can inhibit or destroy IP value, then some prudent techniques for promoting intellectual property value in your company, and finally, some creative ways that you as financial professionals fit into this process. So to begin with a primer, there are four primary areas of intellectual property: trademarks, patents, copyrights, and trade secrets. Starting first with trademarks, a trademark is simply the mechanism for distinguishing the source of one product from another. So, for example, the name Coca-Cola or the Nike swoosh, these are ways for consumers to be able to identify and distinguish products between competitors, for example. And that's the function of a trademark. Turning next to patents, patents have a pretty broad range of protection. For example, there are plant patents, which we're not going to discuss, but the two primary types of patents that are more important for our purposes are design patents, which primarily protect the ornamental look of a product, and then what we call utility patents. And utility patents protect a whole function and features, a whole array of function and features. For example, they can protect the way a product works, they can protect manufacturing processes, business methods, they can protect the way a product is used, chemical compositions, etc. The third area is copyrights. Copyrights protect works of creation. Typically and traditionally, copyrights were used to protect works of authorship, so books, also artistic creations or dance techniques. In more recent history, copyrights have also been used to protect software code or the layout of software on your computer, among other areas. For businesses, some of the primary areas, unless you're a Hollywood studio, that you would see copyright protection in your business is the layout of your website or your marketing materials. These can be protected with a copyright. And then finally, trade secrets. Trade secrets are anything that has commercial value, and reasonable steps are taken to protect it and keep it secret. So the array of what is a trade secret can be customer lists, manufacturing techniques that are kept hidden, and processes, among other things that are secret. Also, computer software code, for example. So turning to a more real life example, or maybe not real life, but at least an example that we enjoy, we show you the banana bike. Now the banana bike, we can demonstrate all four areas of these intellectual property with the bike. So for example, the name banana bike could be protected with a trademark right. That's the way that consumers are going to find this bike and identify it. Secondly, the overall design of the bike. There's overlapping bananas. The overall design could be protected with a design patent. Also, perhaps the way the overlap of those bananas look, it could, let's say it creates an aerodynamic advantage for that design. Well, then we could get a utility patent to protect the aerodynamic advantage. Finally, as a trade secret, perhaps the chemical composition of the paint makes it more aerodynamic, and no one can discover that by just peeling off the paint. You'd actually have to know the composition. So perhaps we protect that as a trade secret. And then finally, bikes may come with a product manual, and that product manual could be protected with a copyright. So there's many other ways that this product could be protected, but at least as far as a couple examples, that should give you a general concept. So now let's talk into some more practical and strategic techniques. As I mentioned, there's four strategy concepts that I'd like to communicate. First is the concept of IP value creation. So that means basically increasing the pie from smaller to bigger. Some primary ways to do that, first and foremost, is you have to protect your intellectual property. In many countries, including the United States, intellectual property rights can be registered with the government. For example, patents can be registered and trademarks with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and copyrights can be registered with the U.S. Copyright Office. It's not always necessary to obtain a registration to have rights, but there are several advantages, and it's a main way for value creation. Moreover, some other ways to create value is to have an organization internally to, for example, audit your rights. So do you have a central way to determine what rights are being created by others in your company? Do you have a central mechanism to do that? This is important for helping value creation. As far as value inhibition or destruction, well, there are several ways to do this. And the one that occurs all the time is not protecting rights, or not even identifying rights that are protectable. Another way to do this is, when you obtain a valuable right, is not to enforce that right. So for example, having a very valuable patent, but not enforcing that patent and stopping someone else from using the technology. And a third, and this is a very important point, it's passing judgment. Financial professionals, you are experts in your field, but so are your designers and so are your marketers. And many times they come up with concepts that you may think are silly or you disagree with, but you have to rely on their expertise the way they rely on yours. And passing judgment can have a very adverse effect on intellectual property rights. I'll give you an example. There was one time an inventor who came into a law firm with shredded rubber bands in a ball and said, I want to get a patent on this. And the patent attorney said, okay. And behind the inventor's back, there was some skepticism among the attorneys about the value of doing this, but the inventor insisted on going forward. That product turned into a multi-million dollar toy, and that inventor is now probably sitting on a beach somewhere, and the attorneys are still working. And it's an example of not passing judgment, because you just don't know, and you got to rely on the expertise and the risk taking of others. Now let's talk about another area, which is IP prudence. What does that mean? Well, there are certain techniques that you can employ to make sure that you're doing a decent job. For example, as I mentioned earlier, having a point person is very critical, and having the right point person is even more critical. So one example is, if IP means you have to deal with your attorneys, and I'm one of them, I understand. Not everyone likes to talk to their attorneys day in and day out. Intellectual property is an area that's very rigorous and intensive and requires sometimes daily interaction with attorneys. One negative experience that can happen is the folks at the C-level push the responsibility for interacting with attorneys too far downstream to those who are completely out of touch with the overall strategy of the company and with the budgetary process and everything else, and there's something lost. So you have to have the right point person. Moreover, communication is key. And what I mean by that is, for example, if you rely on outside attorneys for help, communicate with them, keep them a part of the process. Don't treat them like a line item, treat them like a partner. you will get better results. Other aspects of IP prudency include clearance searching. What is clearance searching? Well, that means you're doing something about evaluating your competitors' rights and making sure that when you enter a marketplace, you're not stepping on a competitor's right. It's very cavalier to go into a new market without doing any sort of due diligence. And that's a penny wise, pound foolish strategy, because due diligence and clearance work is a form of IP insurance. It's trying to give yourself the ability to ensure that you're not stepping on another's rights and stepping into an infringement issue, which will cost 10 times more than doing the clearance due diligence up front. And it's also a much bigger hassle. So now turning to the last area, which is IP creativity. This is the area where you do get to come and play. This is where your creativity as the financial professionals matter. And why is that? Well, what does financial professionals know better than anyone else? Money and how to manage money. Lawyers, we're not known for managing money. neither are engineers, and neither are folks who are on the front line. They're not always the best at managing money. And this is where IP creativity of a financial professional really fits into the process. Moreover, many companies have undervalued assets. And what do I mean by that? Well, let's say a company has 25 patents and only two of them cover commercial products. Well, what are you doing with the other 23? They're probably sitting in a drawer. Well, pull open that drawer and see if there's a way to exploit the value. Maybe you can license those to a non-competitor. Maybe you can sell those assets. But there's a lot of things you can do beyond just having them sit and collect dust. And again, this is how you find and maximize value. Another area where financial professionals are experts is in ROI. You know how to gauge return on investment. A very simple mechanism and oversimplified is looking at ROI from I have a patent, I paid X to get the patent, I have a trademark, I paid Y, and the product is making us Z. Well, that's a very narrow way of looking at an ROI, and I would submit to you it's too narrow. Patents and intellectual property rights, when looked at more expansively, have other features that you have to capture. For example, having a large portfolio of intellectual property rights may discourage a competitor from entering your market. It may also discourage someone from suing you because they're scared of your rights. It also may impress investors. And all of this should be captured as part of your ROI. Now, I say that, and will I provide you the ROI? No, because that's your expertise, not mine. So what I say is get out there, get to it, and take us to the next level of value.